Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I hope you are. Sincerely, genuinely hope you are. Hope you've had a good weekend. Are you bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, rocking and raring for the week ahead? I hope so. Let's go. It's Monday morning. It has just ticked past 8 in the a.m. Greenwich Mean Time on Monday, the 2nd of March, in the year of our Lord, 2026. As always, I'm joined by my producer, Little Harry. How are you this morning, good sir?
Morning. Yeah, I'm good.
Great. And you are the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Thank you for joining me. Without you, it really isn't a thing. It really isn't, is it? So thank you. Before we get into it, quick bit of housekeeping. One correction, probably the worst error I've made on the Bow Show, just quickly to say, just to recognise it. On Friday morning, I said it was odd the print media hadn't gone with the by-election results. Well, I failed to realise that the result didn't come through to like 5 a.m. or something. So there's no way they could have printed it. So that was my first real fail, I think, on the Bow Show. Happy to put my hands up and say, sorry about that, got it wrong. I mean, it's not that bad, is it, if I fail? It's not really that bad, but nonetheless, I got it wrong. So, fair enough. I do want to point it out. I want to try and be as accurate as possible, where, you know, beyond just opinion, just actual fact, if I get it wrong. Fair enough. All right, let's jump into it. I mean, bit of a slow news day today, I think. Not much happened over the weekend. Pretty dull, kind of nothing in the news. Of course, I'm joking. The second, or perhaps even the biggest war of my lifetime kicked off over the weekend. I would say probably second, but I think Iraq 2003 is bigger because of the ground troop elements. But in terms of the restructuring of the balance of power in the entire Middle East, arguably bigger even than that. Possibly the biggest war of my lifetime, and I'm in my mid-40s, so, you know, it's a biggie. It's a big one. Difficult for the Nothing Ever Happens crew to sort of square that circle. Well, should we just jump straight into it? I woke up Saturday morning to the news, as did everyone, to the news that Trump and Bibi finally pulled the trigger on Bibi's dream of bombing Iran back to the Stone Age. Sort of, there's more to it than that, isn't there? All right, well, let's just get straight into it. Okay, what is the actual print media in the UK talking about? As you can imagine, most of it is with a UK slant. So it's not talking often about... Well, sometimes it's talking about the grander picture, but often it's just talking about the use of UK bases and things, which I'll talk all about, but I don't want to spend, you know, half the hour talking all about that. So probably might even whip through the front pages a bit so we can get on to talking about it in more general, more sweeping terms. Sound good to you? I've got no immediate feedback, so that's just what I'm going to do. All right, the papers. Britain backs war on Iran and Trump vows to press on. So one of the first things to say is that when all this was being planned, you know, by the Pentagon, really, they'd asked the UK if they, the US military, could use bases, particularly that Diego Garcia in the Chagos Islands, but also the big RAF base that we've got on Cyprus. Now, whenever stuff goes down in the Middle East and the UK is involved in it, which usually we are, that base on Cyprus is of key strategic importance. But apparently, what it had been, it's not that Starmer and the UK government was particularly pro the Ayatollah or anything like that. They're not, to be fair. But they just thought it might be illegal if the United States and Israel were to unilaterally start a war, a full-scale air campaign against Iran, without going to the UN, with Trump not even asking Congress, that might be illegal, and that the British government didn't want anything to do with that if it were, after the fact, shown to be an illegal action. So that was the UK's government position in the first instance, is no, you can't use Cyprus, you can't use Diego Garcia. And on the first day, on Saturday morning, after the COBRA meeting, that position remained the same, or kind of. The UK said, Starmer said he would put UK planes in the air just for purely defensive purposes. Well, now already, you know, another 24 hours, 36 hours after that, he's done a type of U-turn on that and said, okay, the US can use our bases as long as it's for sort of more defensive purposes. But once you let them use it, you can't really stop them. Once you give the US Air Force the green light to use your runways, you know, Starmer can't, at that point, Starmer can't really stop the Joint Chiefs from flying wherever they want, effectively. But anyway, all right, that's a relatively small detail. Or is it? Or is it? All right, so Britain backs war on Iran. We came out and we said, as did Macron, we've had, on Saturday morning, we had no idea this was, like, imminently going to happen. It was going to happen this morning. We weren't told. We weren't invited one way or another to be involved. We weren't told about it. We found it, basically, we, Starmer and Macron and various others, most others, we found out about it through the news like everyone else. Just not invited to be part of it. Probably for the best, though, that, isn't it? I mean, it's Israel's war, isn't it, basically? Although, that's not entirely fair either, is it? I mean, Iran did export terror all around the world. I mean, there was loads of Iranian terror cells found in Britain, weren't there, last year? Just last year. All right, well, okay. And Trump vows to press on. That was yesterday, Sunday. I've been glued to the news all weekend. Absolutely glued to it. I mean, I'm a news junkie anyway, right? And it's, even if it wasn't my job, I'm a bit of a news junkie anyway, and it's my job. It was like on 9/11 or during shock and awe, the war in 2003 against Iraq, just glued to the TV for like 2-3 days straight or more. Just glued to it. Yesterday, a lot of the news, the angles coming out of the corporate mainstream media, was that Trump hasn't got the, for some reason they decided amongst themselves that Trump hasn't necessarily got the political will to keep this going beyond a few days. Because at first, in the first instance, Trump said, or the Pentagon had said, this will be, quote, a multi-day operation, not a multi-week operation, not we'll keep going for as long as it takes, not that. It was just a multi-day operation. And so, where a few Iranian missiles got through here or there, people started saying in the media that Trump hasn't got the balls, basically, to keep this going for very long. In reaction to that, Trump has come out and explicitly said, no, we'll keep this going for at least a few weeks, or different things, said a few different things over the weekend. One time they did say, as long as it takes. And another thing more recently was that he said something like 4 or 5 weeks. So in other words, it's not going to be over in the next couple of days. But then there's talk that he will sit down with the Iranians again, but whether that's all a bit fake, really. You know, like the negotiations with Kushner and Witkoff in Geneva. Okay, you can sit down at a table. It doesn't necessarily stop military action, does it? But okay, Trump vows to press on. All right, let's look at the actual headlines then. The Daily Telegraph. Britain backs war on Iran. Well, to a limited extent. They're certainly against the regime. You know, Starmer does recognise that the theocratic Islamic regime is a bad one. Says, Trump says regime ready for talks to end attacks. Yeah, they probably are, aren't they? They got hit very hard. We'll get into that in a moment. Number 10. Claims mass evacuation to save thousands in Gulf. That's sort of the biggest story in the British print media, that really. Oil prices to jump 10% as OPEC nations cash in on conflict. So a couple of things there. First of all, the thing about the British mass evacuation of thousands in the Gulf. Yeah, different reports are saying there's something in the order of 90 to 100,000 Brits or expats in the Gulf region, you know, whether it's in Qatar, Kuwait, but mainly like the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, down by the Horn there with the Straits of Hormuz. There's certainly tens and tens of thousands of British people in the region that are at some limited, perhaps not all that limited, risk of being blown up one way or another. Many, if not most, commercial flights are just stopped because, again, they can't guarantee they might not get hit by a missile one way or another. So the big stories, and I don't want to spend loads of time on this, but I'll talk about it because it's in the news, but I won't bang on and on and on about it this morning, is that Britain needs to get those people out. Fair enough, isn't it? There's loads of people, Brits, in Dubai or something. If anyone doesn't know, the United Arab Emirates, seven emirates there, and Abu Dhabi is the biggest one, and Dubai is the second biggest one. The main two are Abu Dhabi and Dubai. The other ones are really, really little, fairly, relatively inconsequential. But Dubai is probably, arguably, the most important one because the airport there is like the busiest airport in the world. If you've ever flown beyond that, if you've ever flown to India or Thailand or Australia or anything like that, you may well stop over in Dubai. It's like one of the busiest travel hubs in the whole world, right? And the whole, and it massively, massively depends on tourism, doesn't it? And so that's a worry for the Emirates there, that tourism will be wrecked, and all the flow of people through there will be wrecked. Well, it will be, won't it, to some degree. So there you go, how to get them out. Because that airport in Dubai is just not, it's closed, right? So you have to get them overland to Saudi Arabia, through the Arabian desert, get them to Saudi Arabia and then flown out from there. So it's a little bit of a logistical nightmare. Okay. I saw one clip on Twitter yesterday of Andrew Tate. I believe he was in Dubai. It looks like he's in Dubai. And he was saying, it's a weird take from Andrew Tate. He was saying, just to his camera phone, saying, oh, anyone that thinks this is a war, you're mad, you don't understand reality, that's crazy, you don't know anything. This is just an event. Call me in 2 days. Nothing's happening, basically, sort of, kind of. I'm paraphrasing. But that's what he said. Like Andrew Tate knows what he's talking about. Who told Andrew Tate he knows anything about grand strategy and geopolitics? Should probably stick to things he knows about. Like kickboxing and cigars. Being some sort of unconvicted wannabe pimp. Andrew Tate talking about grand strategy. Oh, but we live in a matrix, according to him. Okay, bro. Oh, Harry, you're a Zoomer. You're a real-life Zoomer. You're 20 years old, right? What do you guys think of Andrew Tate? Is he, like, really cool and everyone loves him, or is he a bit 2020?
Yeah, he was kind of big way back when I was, like, actually in secondary. But we kind of figured out that he was retarded. he doesn't really have anything good to say, I don't think. None of it.
Oh, well, there you go. The authentic opinion of a Zoomer there. Andrew Tate should stick to things he knows about, like moving through the world suffering from mild retardation. There you go. All right, let's move on. Dubai is in a bit of trouble, because that's one of the grander things to talk about, is that how after Iran was struck and the entire Ayatollah and a lot of the Iranian regime were blown to pieces in the very, very first salvo, that Iran struck out all over the place, attacking nominally, supposedly, US and Israeli assets in, well, everywhere, Kuwait, Iraq, Bahrain, Qatar, all the UAE, even in Jordan, even in Riyadh. There's reports of some explosions in Riyadh, in Saudi Arabia, all over the place. In Oman, they're definitely supposed to be friends with Oman, Iran are. So they're striking out all over the place. And, you know, you expect it, right? Obviously. Even like the headquarters of the US 5th Fleet. Okay. But now it does seem like, by the end of the, by the evening on Saturday and all day Sunday, seems like they are striking sort of civilian infrastructure, though, in these places. Like blowing up the runway of a civilian airport. Or like, didn't the Burj Al Arab get hit? Or very, very close to it. Right? Individual hotels in the Emirates or whatever getting hit. Well, okay, that just seems what's going on, among loads and loads of other things. One of the things, a broader point I'll say, is that it is big, I mean, state the obvious, but it is quite a big thing that's going on. The amount of ordnance that has been fired by both sides in this, the amount of missiles that have been going off from both sides over the weekend, gigantic, gigantic. Not really seen anything like it since 2003, or maybe ever, really. An exchange of missiles on a grand scale, like the Israelis and the Americans peppering Iran all over the place, from top to bottom, all over Iran, all sorts of stuff. It's quite a big action going down. Again, the nothing ever happens crew saying, wake me up when something happens. Well, if you don't count this, then, it would have to be some sort of nuclear exchange or a mass extinction event or something before you count it as something happening. But okay, what was the other thing? Oh, we'll talk about oil prices really, because the Straits of Hormuz, that stretch of water going out into the Gulf of Oman, about 20% of the world's crude oil and lots of natural gas from Qatar, about 20% of all the world's crude goes through there in tankers. Thing is, though, interesting to note that 90% of that goes east, ends up in China, South Korea, Japan, mainly China. So if the Straits of Hormuz are closed, which they are, because one or two tanks have gone through there and been hit, so the insurance companies are like, we're not insuring any tankers going through there, so the shipping just stops, basically, almost entirely. China most affected. But it's not like China hasn't got other ways of getting crude. It's not like they haven't got a big oil industry of their own. The United States doesn't need a single drop from there. It's completely self-sufficient in crude. So although it's big, although it's important, 20% of the world's crude oil just suddenly stopping, it doesn't mean like the whole world is going to grind to a halt or anything. We're not even close. Like Kuwait and Saudi Arabia can get their oil west through pipelines if they need to, and they can. There's a way to get crude oil, again, through pipes across the Emirates into the Gulf of Oman. So it's not like the end of the world. So there you go. Oil prices jump 10%. I mean, that's not insignificant, but it's not crazy, is it? Like the price of a barrel of oil, at least this morning, was still something like, I think it was in the order of $80 a barrel, which isn't crazy. It goes over $100 a barrel all the time. Well, not all the time, but that's a classic benchmark thing. Is oil above or below $100 a barrel? Well, right now, despite all of this, it's still not really close to $100 a barrel. We'll see how the markets move this morning. Just to let you know, I used to work for an oil commodities trading company. I was never a trader. I'm not going to claim I was actually a trader. I was involved in the brokerage side of things. But nonetheless, took it upon myself to know a fair bit about crude oil commodities trading and things. So, okay, it's a big deal, the Straits of Hormuz and the crude oil thing and the price of a barrel of crude and all that sort of thing. But it doesn't seem like it's not tanking the world economy or anything close, right? Most trading desks will have factored this sort of thing in a while ago because they're not stupid. Okay, I mean, it's a give and take. Some other markets will do well out of it. You know, gold will do well, right? I've already seen this morning that, for example, Australian oil companies doing well because suddenly what they offer is of more value, for example. So, all right, it is what it is. I wouldn't expect, like, the world's economy to be massively affected. It will be affected. But just not, it's not going to be some sort of implosion event or anything like that. All right. This guy, chasing the deadly thud of missiles around Tel Aviv. in a Kia Picanto, says some Telegraph journalist. Because it's about him, is it? All right. The Times, the venerable Times, Trump vows to press on. There you go. President says plan to eradicate Iran regime is ahead of schedule. Okay. Tehran's reprisals breach defences of Gulf states and Israel. Yeah, a few getting through. Definitely a fair few getting through. Also, let's talk about it. For anyone who doesn't know, didn't watch any news over the weekend. Saturday morning, they hit the Ayatollah's offices. And it didn't emerge until much, much later that night, right till the end of the night, UK time anyway, that he was in fact dead. All that day, it was like, is he, isn't he? The Iranians were saying, oh, we're going to put him on TV any minute. He's going to make a statement. He's definitely not dead. Well, he was. But as well as loads of the other leadership, something like 50-odd more of the leadership are dead. I saw this morning that Ahmadinejad has been killed. Do anyone remember him? He was the president quite a few years ago, quite at the beginning of the 2000s. Loads of them they took out. But Iran knew he was going to die soon anyway. He was like 85, 86, and it was possible he would get assassinated. So he could have died of natural causes at any moment. So anyway, they apparently had all sorts of things in place to replace him as the Ayatollah quickly, if needs be. Well, needs be. So they did already. They've got some sort of interim leader or interim committee, and they're going to pick a permanent one very, very soon. And apparently in Iran, as well as not just the Ayatollah, but loads of other senior roles, they've got it set up, they've got structures in place to replace that person should they suffer from a cruise missile attack or something. So Iran have got things in place to replace the people if and when they get taken out. So, okay, it's well and good, isn't it, that the... Well, not... Perhaps not good, but it's standard operating procedure in war to try and disrupt and destroy the command structure of your enemy. It's 101 stuff, isn't it? If you can sow confusion amongst your enemy's leadership, you do that. Well, if they can just keep replacing the people there, how good... I mean, it's a difficult strategy. A couple of things analysts have said, which I thought were of interesting note, that it seems a bit odd that Iran, on that Saturday morning, decided to hold a meeting with lots and lots of their very, very top, most senior people in the entire government and military structure to all meet in one place, one room, essentially. That wasn't a good idea. Because even in recent years, Israel, that's how they've taken out loads of Hezbollah and Hamas. Their intelligence is spot on, whether it's signals intelligence, you know, whether they're just keeping tap of people's phones or whatever, or whether it's human intelligence, they've actually got people there, literally Mossad agents watching everyone that's going in and out of certain buildings, even in the middle of Tehran. One way or another, seems like both Israeli and American intelligence are able to keep tabs on these people, sort of kind of perfectly in real time. And so it's not a good idea to all meet in one place if you know you're on their death list. But anyway, that's what Iran did on Saturday morning. And so Israel and America took the opportunity to take them all out in one go, in one moment, basically. And so it's coming out now, it seems, apparently it was coming out over the course of yesterday, that was the idea, that America would move all the assets it wanted into the region, and then it would kick off, they would wait for the moment when they could attempt something like that, and that would be the moment to start the conflict, start the war. Well, that moment came sort of immediately. I remember when Shock and Awe started in 2003, they tried to take out Saddam. They opened, Shock and Awe opened, with loads of attacks on Saddam's palaces all over Baghdad. They were obviously hoping to kill him immediately. you know, cut the head off the snake in the first instant of the thing. But they didn't get Saddam. They didn't get him that time. Well, this time they did. This time it worked. So, okay, that's how it started. I mean, big news for to wake up to on a Saturday morning. Big news. But then the next thing is, isn't it? The next thing is, even if this air campaign is completely successful in what it is attempting, i.e., taking out everything of military note in Iran, taking out all their missiles, let's say, even if it can achieve that, that doesn't necessarily equals a regime change. According to Trump and Netanyahu, the plan is to just hope the Iranian people take control of the government at a certain point. I mean, you're relying on that. Not a great plan, is it? Not an amazing plan. I mean, if that is the grand plan. I mean, when Trump did his opening speech, a little 8-minute video that was released from Mar-a-Lago. He's using Mar-a-Lago as the Situation Room, basically. He's done it before, but anyway, that seems odd to me. At least be in the White House or the Pentagon. Anyway, tiny point. In that video, the first 8-minute video, he said, you know, once we've done what we're going to do, dear people of Persia, once we've done what we're going to do, go and take your government. It's yours for the taking. It's like, but Donald, what if, for whatever reason, they don't or can't still, though? What then? Talking to Nate about it yesterday evening for the State of Politics, my other channel. And he said, surely they've got a plan. One of the things he said, you would think they've got a full plan. And maybe they have. Maybe they have got like a 4D, 5D chess brilliant plan ready and waiting to replace the mullahs and the Ayatollah, that government, that whole regime. Maybe they've got some sort of brilliant plan for that. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't, though. I wouldn't be surprised if that is the plan, just hoping the Iranian people take control. And then just hoping there's a completely peaceful government and completely peaceful transition to a functioning civil society. But it seems like a bit of a long shot, doesn't it? Unfortunately. Because you would think that in 2003, you're going in to take out Saddam Hussein and all his henchmen. You're going to completely remove the Ba'athist party from Iraq. Okay. Well and good, I suppose, if you're a Pentagon planner. And then what? Yeah, they didn't have... we'll put Paul Bremer in charge. What? Really? That's the plan, was it? We'll put David Petraeus in charge. What? Of Iraq? Not a great plan. So that's the worry. It's what I've been saying all along, haven't I, in the run-up to this? Yeah, get rid of the Ayatollah regime. Good. There's a terrible, oppressive, murderous regime. Okay, but what about the day after? What about, you know, what comes next? Don't want it to descend into sectarian nightmare that lasts a generation, though. What's the plan for that? Well, at the moment, it looks like the plan is, fingers crossed, the Iranian people just sort of magically form a government that is peaceful and works perfectly. Oh. Okay. I just hope that sort of one of the things Nate said is right, that there is some sort of brilliant plan going to come out of the Pentagon and the State Department saying, oh, we've got this person, whether it's that Crown Prince Pahlavi or whoever, someone else. Trump's got a couple of different, apparently, got a couple of different people in mind who could run an interim government in Iran. It's shaky, it's a gamble. There's no other way of saying it, is it? It's a political gamble to have done this. But I mean, there is also weight to the argument, isn't there, that It's not great to just leave that regime in there forever. Just completely condemn the 90 plus million Iranian people to that repression forever. That's not a great idea either, is it? Let alone the nuke angle. It wouldn't be great if Iran got a nuclear weapon, would it? All right, should we press on with this? Oh, there's a picture. This is outside the Iranian embassy in London. So, of course, so quick talk about then, quick few minutes talking about how popular it is. So, of course, the diaspora, the Iranian diaspora, i.e. people that are from Iran, or even second generation people that are from Iran, like Maya Tusi or something, the vast, vast majority of those people, as you can imagine, are against the regime and so happy that this is happening. Over the moon, the Ayatollah's dead. Again, I don't necessarily blame them. Well, I don't blame them at all. So, okay. In the rest of the world, Iranian people are happy about it. This is outside the Iranian embassy. This will be actually be Prince's Gate in Kensington, where the Iranian embassy siege happened in 1980. Got a long-form bit of content about that on Epochs. Behind the paywall. Bo Dade's Epochs history-themed show. Alright, so yeah, the diaspora will be happy. But what about inside Iran? Now, we know, don't we? It seems undeniable. Well, I think it is undeniable that lots and lots of people inside Iran, probably, almost certainly, I'm comfortable to say, the majority, maybe even the vast majority of people in Iran, are unhappy with the regime. I mean, the economy has collapsed. Inflation is through the roof. It's difficult to buy even simple things like bread and cheese, simple things. People going hungry almost often. It's not great in Iran, and loads of people do blame the regime. That's not even to touch upon the sort of religious repression, forcing women to cover their hair and all that sort of thing. The regime isn't popular in Iran. Comfortable saying that. But the other thing is, though, it does still enjoy some support, still, among a few million other Iranian people. That's also true to say. It's not 100% roundly despised by absolutely everyone. That would be wrong to say that, wouldn't it? There was a big rally in the middle of Tehran on, was it yesterday? And it was big, it was massive. I mean, it's difficult to make the argument that every single one of those people were coerced into doing that. It doesn't look like that was the case. In fact, it might even have, I should have bookmarked exactly where it was, but there was one particular story that said you could see the crowds from space. Well, depends what satellite you're talking about. The best satellites, you could see a single car from space. But anyway, the point is that there was a massive rally in Tehran of pro-regime people, you know, crying and wailing that their beloved Ayatollah has been martyred. Right, lots of people turned out for that. Lots. So it's not as simple as that everyone is over the moon that this regime is being pounded to oblivion from the sky. I think a lot of people are, perhaps the majority, maybe the vast majority, but it's not everyone, though. There will still be a section of society that are absolutely pro the regime. So, I mean, again, I remember in 2003, when Saddam was toppled, once the US armoured divisions had entered Baghdad, done thunder runs through the middle of Baghdad and liberated Baghdad, the regime, Saddam's regime was over. There was this iconic moment, anyone old enough to remember will remember. There's a giant statue of Saddam, and it got pulled down. They pulled it down. First of all, put a US flag over the thing, and then somebody realised that was bad optics, so they put an Iraqi flag over it. And when it was pulled down, all the people of Baghdad, the scenes were that they were jubilant. They were so happy, they were overjoyed that finally their tyrant had been toppled. They were jumping up and down on the statue and ripping it to bits. And it seemed like, oh, politically, this was the right thing to do. It's the best thing to do. We've saved these people from a dictator and a tyrant. And purely from a political point of view, it was righteous. It was good and righteous, the right thing to have done. Okay. In that moment, that's what it looked like. The people were happy, universally happy to be rid of Saddam. All right. But then look what happened. Okay, that jubilation lasted not very long at all. Not very long at all. And then, quite quickly, a sectarian nightmare that lasts a generation or more. Would it be the same here? Right, look. Look, those people there. They're all really happy the Ayatollah's gone. Okay. Okay, well and good. All right, agree with you, yeah. He was a murderous scumbag. All right. Now what? Though. Now what? Is Iran, Persia, going to transition into a perfectly working political system? My concern is that it not only won't it sort of can't. It's such a melting pot of different peoples and ideas, ethnicities, religions, languages, all that sort of thing. And it'd be very, very difficult for it to just suddenly work politically, like Germany or France or the UK. All right, well, we shall see. I mean, getting a bit of ahead of ourselves, really, because the regime's still there, still firing missiles all over the place. All that is assuming that the regime does topple and fall. Hasn't yet. It might not. We'll see how resilient it is. All right, The Guardian, Middle East rocked by a second day of bombing. The Express, it's a good paper, 94,000 Brits trapped in Middle East. The Daily Mail, pure slop, trying to pretend it's not slop, when in fact it is utter slop. UK draws up rescue plan for Britons trapped in Gulf states. Okay, the Eye paper, UK planning to evacuate Britons from Middle East as Iran war grows. See, that's the main angle the British papers are going with. Stranded, are you stranded in Dubai? Look, the Burj Al Arab. According to Andrew Tate, though, is you're living in a matrix. It's all fake. There's nothing going on there. The Sun. Wayne Rooney had a few drinks. Escape from Dubai. I guess it's like escape from New York. Escape from Dubai. The Star. The Great Escape. All right, I think you get it. The Independent. Three US troops killed as attacks escalate across Middle East. Okay, the Metro. Ugh. Very quick to stay in camp. Ugh. Death throes of the tyrant. Ahmadinejad, remember him? He's dead now, apparently. The Financial Times. Iran seeks revenge for Khomeini with strikes on Israel and Gulf allies. First American casualties as three soldiers are killed and five wounded. Disruption to shipping lanes. Poised to drive up global energy prices. Trump says military campaign is running ahead of schedule. Okay, those are the papers. Let's have a look at our poll. We did a poll. Now, I can't remember the exact wording it was, but it was something Iran-related. Okay, so we said, do you think the air campaign will result in a change of regime? Okay, just to let you know where I am on that. Before I read out the results, is that I decided this morning to go for one that really isn't a slam dunk. Sometimes I give you a poll, don't I, where it's kind of obvious what anyone at least watching this show would answer. Like, do you like globalism or something? And it'd be like 95% no. And I could go, yeah, you're all with me. But sometimes, probably more often than not, I'd like to do ones which are a bit more ambiguous. And that's one because my feeling on that, do you think the air campaign will result in a change of regime? My personal take is, I've got no idea. I put it at 50-50, or maybe 60-40, 60% no. Something like that. It's really, there's no right or wrong answer. It's not clear, is it? It's not clear to anyone. So we'll just see what you say. So you said, what did you guys think? Okay. Do you think the campaign will result in a change of regime? Yes, 43%. No, 29%. Maybe 28%. Very nearly 1,500 votes on that. So, okay, I mean, that does sort of reflect my position of like, oh, I don't know. A solid 28% said maybe. Yeah, I suppose if I was to take that poll, I may click maybe. I think I'd probably click maybe if it were me. A third of you clicked maybe on that. Yeah. And then the other one, 43% to 29%. I mean, it is a win for the yes, but it's not like overwhelming, is it? It's not like a crazy. So, yeah, you're split on it as well. Yeah. We'll have to see. We'll have to see how things play out. The fog of war, when things go to war, it's just unpredictable, isn't it? It's very, very difficult to predict wars often. Unless it's sort of an absolutely overwhelming thing. Like, you'd probably predict that the US forces in 1990 could liberate Kuwait. That's sort of reasonably predictable, right? You could probably predict that the US forces in 2002 could take out the Taliban. Okay, but this, without any boots on the ground, if there were boots on the ground, if it was like 2003 and they'd amassed hundreds of thousands of the US Army and Marines, loads of special forces, endless helicopter attack ships and loads of armoured divisions, thousands and thousands of Abrams and Bradleys, and then, yeah, I'd say 80, 90%, yeah, it will change the regime. More and more, 95, almost 100%, yeah. But they're not doing that, are they? It's very different. This hangs in the balance, I feel. Anyway, the poll seems to reflect that. Well over 1,500 now, so, you know, the poll does reflect my feeling of, I don't know, maybe. Cool, all right, well, once again, not a complete divergence between my take and that of you guys. All right, well, let's move on then. Shall we have a quick look at the actual websites? Perhaps even something else, news from something else. Probably not. It's going to be Iran, wall to wall, for days now, isn't it? Maybe weeks. Get used to me talking about Iran every morning, because it will probably be what it is. After a while, I'll try and taper it off, if possible. Talk about other things that are in the news, if possible. But, okay. So here we go. Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon exchange fire as conflict widens after attack on Iran. Yeah, so part of the news is that Israel has also struck into Lebanon, because Hezbollah and Iran were always, you know, one the same thing. Or Hezbollah was a proxy of Iran, wasn't it? So, yeah, well, it sort of makes sense, doesn't it? That was sort of one of the obvious things that were likely to happen, is that tensions between Israel and Hezbollah would flare up again. Obviously, Israel would want to annihilate Hezbollah down to every last one of their soldiers, if they could. Okay. RAF responding to suspected drone strike at UK base in Cyprus, MOD says. Yeah, that was one of the things, actually, that made Keir Starmer and the British government change their mind slightly, is that there was reports that a drone or two had hit our RAF base in Cyprus, and therefore our government sort of changed their mind. Whether true or not, that's quite a long-range drone, isn't it, to hit Cyprus? If it flew directly from mainland Iran, maybe not, who knows? I don't know. Don't really know the details all about that. I'm not sure anyone does particularly in massive detail. In the wider world, I mean, in the press, in the chattering classes like us. Allies of US in the Gulf bear brunt of Iran attacks. Yeah, like Bahrain, Kuwait, Qatar, the UAE, all of them. Iran's regime is still intact. The coming days will show if it can hold out. Well, that's the thing, isn't it? That's the key thing at the moment, is that the regime is still in place. Can it? Will it last forever? Could it last for weeks and weeks and weeks? Just keep replacing all their top brass after they're killed. Just keep doing that almost endlessly. And keep control of the streets. I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I really don't know. It could be, couldn't it, over the coming week, like in a few days' time, that there's mass risings all the way across Iran, and those people aren't put down by force. They aren't just shot in the thousands on the streets, and they do take control of the state. They do take control of, or at least, key government buildings, key military buildings and sites. Just the normal people, mobs, take control of it. Well, that might end in, well, that would end in the immediate, would be sort of a very, very, very chaotic, fluid thing. But at least then the regime, in inverted commas, if nothing else is removed, then that power vacuum, power vacuums aren't good. Power vacuums are terrible. Will end in tears. Power vacuums are, historically speaking, very, very bad things. So, if just the people, just mobs, did rise up and take all the key government buildings and everything, take control of them, you would want that power vacuum to be filled as quickly as possible. Ideally with the right people, but again, that's all a bit of a hope and a prayer, isn't it? It's all a bit of a hope and a prayer that it would play out perfectly like that. Okay. Oil prices rise. There's one thing which isn't about Iran in the news this morning. Major changes to asylum system set to come into force. Yeah, it's a bit twiddling around the edges, but they're saying that if you're a refugee, if you've claimed refugee status in the UK, it'll be reviewed every 30 months. I mean, great. And then if they realise that your country of origin isn't actually a danger, i.e. you're not actually a refugee, then you'll get deported. I mean, it's kind of tweaking around the edges. And I don't trust that they really will deport many of these people anyway. Because that person, whoever it is, would appeal. They would get human rights lawyers to appeal for them endlessly. Appeal to the ECHR or whatever. And we end up not deporting loads of people still, ultimately. Yeah, little story here, horrible little story. Deadly Texas bar shooting, potentially act of terrorism, says FBI. So in Austin, Texas, some black guy shot up a bar. Killing three people. I think one of them is him, though. So killing two people, but wounding a bunch of others. He's wearing a sweater that said something about Allah on it. I am the property of Allah, or something like that. It seems like it may well be in some sort of retaliation for the action going on in Persia, but so that is a story. Okay, nothing particularly different in there. Let's have a look at the Sky News. Their RAF base in Cyprus hit by suspected drone strike. Well, okay, Iran flailing out all over the place. Sort of flailing around, I would say. One of the things I've noticed, I haven't seen much or anything really about Iranian fast jets, fighter jets, interceptors. I haven't really seen any of that. Like the skies above the UAE or Doha with Iranian jets. Either they didn't really have many in the first place, or the ones they have were taken out straight away, or they're actually crappy sort of 1970s, 1980s era ex-Soviet ones, and there's no point. Because F-35s and F-22s or whatever, F-18s, will just take them out immediately. Or missiles, anti-aircraft missiles, batteries. We'll just take them out immediately. Some 1970s Soviet thing. There's no point, really. Anyway, doesn't seem like the Iranian Air Force is of any consequence. And as for all the missiles they've got, I mean, this is something that should be talked about a little bit. Probably talk about this more in the coming days. But they've got all sorts of different type of missiles, right? You've got just like drones, just relatively small, like an unmanned drone thing. And they go very slowly. They go like 120 mile an hour, 150 mile an hour, i.e. very, very slowly. Bzzz, just flying along. And then you've got a whole suite of different types of missiles, of various sizes that go various speeds. But the fastest ones they've got, the so-called hypersonic. Because anything supersonic just means going faster than the speed of sound, which is what? 760-odd miles per hour is supersonic. But then they've got ones that they call hypersonic. And those ones go at like, I don't know, what, like Mach 5 or something? Correct me if I'm wrong, but in that ballpark. Five times the speed of sound. Thousands and thousands of miles an hour. Now, those ones are quite difficult, I believe, for various intercept, like Patriot, or all sorts of types of different anti-missile missiles. The hypersonic ones are difficult to shoot down because they're going so fast. Everyone knows that Iran has got some. They fired some on Israel last summer, didn't they? There doesn't seem to, so far, hasn't been a massive amount of those. But we know Iran's got them. So are they waiting? Are they saving those? So they will have a finite amount, even if they've got a stockpile of lots. There'll still be a finite amount. Like whether they're saving those to shoot at the US aircraft carriers or particular targets in Qatar or UAE or on into Israel itself. Are they saving those for a particular moment? I don't know. As sort of flailing around as Iran is, it also seems like they do have some sort of plan, some sort of strategy. We'll see how it plays out, won't we? We'll see how it all plays out. All right. I didn't realise we're actually getting towards the top of the hour. That went quickly. That 50 minutes felt like 10, 15 to me. All right. Well, it's just wall-to-wall Iran. So there was a tiny bit of slop in the sun, I thought was mildly interesting. Like Ahmadinejad. Looking old. So a tiny bit of slop. But Ian Huntley's still not dead. Still in a bad way, but not actually dead. Something about strippers. Brilliant. Iran. What was the bit of slop I was interested in? Epstein's Western Ranch. Just a story about how the police or the FBI or whoever sort of probably didn't search it properly. There might have been all sorts of evidence there missed. Oh, there we go. Here we go. Just to mention this this shooting in Austin. That guy. Look, this guy. He said property of Allah on his top. Okay, doesn't look particularly Persian, does he? He's obviously a Muslim, though. Property of Allah with his gun there. Going into a bar in Austin, Texas, shooting people up. These freaks. All right, well, that is nearly the hour with Super Chats and everything. Should we just have a quick couple of minutes of talking about on this day in history? Quick couple of minutes. I like doing that. You guys seem to like that section. Okay, on this day, on the 2nd of March, throughout the centuries, what happened? In 1791, long-distance communication speeds up with the unveiling of a semaphore machine in Paris. On this day in 1796, Napoleon Bonaparte is appointed commander-in-chief of the French army in Italy. Yeah, great. I've got loads of content on Epochs and History Bro all about the career and life of Napoleon. That campaign of 1796-97, that really put General Bonaparte on the map. There's like the Battle of Lodi. Number of battles in that campaign where he humbled a number of different armies. That was when he first burst onto the scene, really. I mean, he's already been around, but this is when the whole rest of the world or whole rest of Europe woke up and was like, oh, this guy does war differently. He's a whole different prospect. He's not doing it in the gentlemanly manner. He's attacking us when we didn't expect it. That's not fair. He's attacking us from all different angles at different times and marching really fast and attacking us where we didn't think he would even be, all that sort of thing. We've got a new Caesar on our hands. Yeah, the Italian campaign. That's very, very interesting. Okay, on this day in 1807, US Congress bans the slave trade within the US, effective the 1st of January 1808. Yeah, so a bit like the Brits. Before you sort of make all slavery illegal, emancipating anyone who is currently a slave, first, years before, you ban the trade of it first. So you live in a world where there are slaves and you can buy and sell slaves. First, you just ban buying and selling of slaves. And then later, you emancipate anyone who's still living who is a slave. So, Yeah, there you go, 1807 in the United States. All right. On this day in 1888, the Convention of Constantinople is signed, guaranteeing free maritime passage through the Suez Canal during war and peace. That's interesting. Why is the Suez Canal being controlled from Constantinople? Well, it's the Ottoman Empire, isn't it? It's the Ottoman Empire. Any Muslim try and tell you, particularly a Turk, try and complain about imperialism and colonialism. Someone like Cenk Uygur moan about colonialism. Get a clue, read a book. Okay, 1946, Ho Chi Minh is elected president of North Vietnam. Ho Chi Minh, very interesting, obviously a filthy communist in my opinion. Very, very interesting person in life though. Lived through a whole number of things. Didn't actually live to see the end of the Vietnam War, did he? Anyway. 1956, French-Moroccan agreement signed in Paris rescinds the Treaty of Fez, declaring independence of Morocco from France. Yeah, France wanted to make Morocco just one more bit of France. Yeah, good idea, yeah. Make places like Morocco and Algeria just one more department of France. Weird. All right, on this day in 1972, Jean Bedel Bokassa appoints himself president for life of the Central African Republic. Yeah, this guy's mad. This guy's absolutely insane. Almost a cliched example of an African leader who is mad. Completely drunk on power. Completely drunk. Made himself an emperor. Tried to model it on Napoleon's coronation. When Napoleon declared himself an emperor, not merely a king. Or not merely a general or first consul, but an emperor. Okay, mate. Yeah. I was also guilty of loads and loads of butchery and killing and genocide. Even personally killing school kids, apparently. Mad. On this day in the year 2002, US invasion of Afghanistan, US conventional forces first deployed as part of Operation Anaconda. Okay, there you go. All right, interesting. All right, shall we have a look at the Rumble Rants and Super Chats? Got three Rumble Rants here. Luke St. 91, or Luke Street 91, I don't know how you want that read. He said, there's a theory that the reason why Iran attacked the civilian, like civilian targets, I suppose, is that they were hoping to get these countries to ask Trump to de-escalate, but now looks like they're going to join in. Yeah, it's always a dodgy plan, that, isn't it? To attack people to get them to be on your side. Dodgy tactic, that. Puts me in mind of Napoleon attacking the Russians. I'll go to war with you so that you will be on my side. So I beat you and then you're on my side. Isn't it more likely to make them hate you even more? Yeah. I mean, it's a good point and maybe you're right, but it's a long shot, isn't it? It's like, you really don't like me, so I'm going to beat you up until you do. What? Same person, Luke St. 91, Luke Street 91, it might be St. Luke, all right, says, people think it's going to be a mix of former people from the old government switching sides for immunity and the ex-prince to create temporary government as they transition power. Yeah, that's sort of the most realistic, something like that, isn't it? Yeah, people that are already there, like Venezuela, like what Trump did in Venezuela, all the people that are in the government, you can stay as long as you start playing by my tune. Okay. Seems to have worked quite well in Venezuela. It didn't work very well in Iraq when they didn't do that, right? When every single person that was involved in Saddam's government, all the way down, every single one, just sweep you aside, get rid of you. That was terrible. That caused a bigger power vacuum than necessary and was disastrous. So maybe you're quite right. Maybe that is what they'll do, something like that. Okay, Busted Brian says, Reza Pahlavi claims to have already prepped a provisional governmental body, okay, and that they are ready with an ironclad plan for the switchover. I find it hard to believe you haven't heard already. Oh no, I mean, I do know about that, but okay, a couple of words then about that Crown Prince Pahlavi. Yeah, he says this. He's been saying this sort of thing for years, his whole life. He's been saying, I'm just waiting for the moment where I can go back to Iran. And yeah, I know all about it. But the thing is, lots of people, even in Iran, many support him. Many think he's the guy. But lots of people don't. Lots of people like, the Shah was terrible. We didn't like the Shah. We don't want a return to something like that. And this Pahlavi guy is not the guy. A lot of people say that, think that. Trump himself has been very lukewarm about the Crown Prince. Before now, many times they've been asked about it. Like, if you tried to do anything in Iran, Mr. Trump, if the regime fell one day, what about Crown Prince Pahlavi? Would you, he's the guy, right? And Trump's always been like, no, I don't know, I'm not sure, not really. He's really lukewarm about him. Like, the State Department isn't touting him. He can talk all he wants about having an ironclad provisional government ready to rock and roll. It's easy to say something like that, isn't it? To actually pick them all and say, these are the people I'm going to do. It's easy to say that. It's another thing to go to Persia and make that a reality. I mean, just to be perfectly clear, I say good luck to him. That sounds like one of the best plans I've heard. My personal opinion, go for it. I mean, fingers crossed for you. Whether it works. And the Americans don't seem all that enamoured with the idea. Plenty of people in Persia, it seems, not necessarily dying for him to come back. But then, having said that, lots are. Lots are, though, as well. It's definitely seen loads of protests in the diaspora and in Iran saying he's the guy, chanting his name. I know all about it. But I can only talk about so many things, given 50 minutes. Sorry. And I'll talk about it in... I find it hard to believe you haven't heard already. Yeah. All right. Alright. Inchkit89 says, do you think the Cyprus RAF base strike could have been a bit of a false flag to give Britain an excuse to get involved, quote, legally? Absolutely possible. I don't know one way or another, but that's absolutely possible. That's all I can say on that. I suspect not, but wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. Okay. Fair point. Good point. Oh, one more rumble rant just came in from that busted Brian again, who says, Iraq failed because they are ethnically and culturally Arab-Muslim. Iran is not ethnically Arab, and the Muslim culture was forced on them. I mean, yes, no, to some degree. I mean, so, first of all, Iraq and Iran are very different prospects, very different things. And yeah, I know all about the various ethnic makeup of people in Iran. It's all different. There are lots of Arabs in Iran. Lots of them are Persian, of course. But then you've got like Turkmens up in the north. You've got all sorts. It's a bit of a melting pot of different peoples. The idea that Islam was forced on them, well, Arab armies, Muslim armies did pass through there in what, like the 8th century. So I suppose you do mean that the Islamic theocracy of the mullahs and the ayatollahs were forced on them in 1979. So, yeah, that's true. But the idea that Islam is, like, new to Persia... No. Muslim armies went through there well over 1,000 years ago, so... But still, I guess the point you're making, to give you benefit of the doubt, is still fair enough. It was forced on them in 1979, a theocracy. Yeah, that's true. In coming days, I think I should have to talk about a bit, from time to time, about the religious and ethnic makeup of Persia in a bit more detail. Because it is a complicated picture. Even more complicated than Iraq, I'd say. Potential for disaster. Sectarian disaster. Okay, let's have a look at the super chats. Oh, there's quite a few. There's loads, actually. So I'll whip through them. Sorry if I don't give like a comment and a reaction to every single one. All right, Global Church History says, today, I guess in this year, 537 AD it would be, Belisarius sieges Ostrogothic Rome. Yeah, on Epochs, I've got a three-part series just about Belisarius. I wonder if you've seen that Global Church History, talking all about Belisarius and his Justinian the First general extraordinaire and the reconquest of the Western Roman Empire. Brilliant story. Fantastic story, the story of Belisarius. Done it in a fair amount of detail. Okay. Global Church History said, sorry, Belisarius was besieged by Vitiges. Oh, well, it's all in and around there. I mean, the campaigns of the Western reconquest of Rome by Belisarius didn't last all that long, did it? It's a very complicated story. Okay, Principled Uncertainty says, this was Keir's first good decision, no more being a foreign country's unpaid mercenaries. Fair enough, yeah, I mean, maybe, quite, yeah. Luke Stewart says, g'day, Bo, it's been interesting listening to a couple of people talk about this is also a good way to deal with China taking Venezuela and Iran off the table for them. Yeah, I mean, I sort of joked, although it's not really a joke, earlier that Straits of Hormuz closed, China most affected. So it's true, it's all true. Again, I don't think they'll be starved of oil because of it. They'll find another way round. But yeah, it would be frustrating and annoying for China that this has happened. Yeah, quite right. D.R. Tisking says, long-time listener, first-time caller. Oh, hi. My dad was friends with Iranians before the revolution when he was in college. No money to guess their fates. So I hope the regime change for them is nothing else, if nothing else. So I hope for regime change for them, if nothing else. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. Someone in my family, very close to me in my family, travelled across the world overland from England down to Southeast Asia into Australia in the 1960s. They travelled across Iran and Afghanistan, India, Pakistan, the whole thing, in the 1960s. And they say how it was great and there was no problems. That you could move through places like Iran and Afghanistan, as a Westerner, in the 1960s, pretty much fine. Oh, well, fine. Couldn't say that today, could you? I wouldn't fancy travelling across country, even before this recent conflagration. I wouldn't fancy just travelling across Iran or Afghanistan. Be worrying, wouldn't it? Okay. Luke Stewart says, I also find it funny that the attack happened on the 11th day of the 9th month of the Islamic calendar. And that is basically just to whack a leader. And this is basically just whack a leader until get one they want to negotiate. Okay, yeah. Yeah. Just keep taking them out until they put a leader in charge who's prepared to sit at the negotiating table and give you everything you want. It's a classic strategy. As old as it goes, that sort of thing goes back to the ancient world. Yeah, we'll just keep killing your leaders until we get the one we want. Yeah, classic. Luke Stewart again says, also he offered immunity to soldiers to basically rebel, which has been interesting as previous times they've done this. They made it if you were part of the old government, you were pure evil and no hope. Yeah, that was one of the things Trump said. Yeah, he said to like the Revolutionary Guard and things, lay down your weapons, and if you do, we'll give you immunity. How he can't really guarantee them immunity from the mob, can he, in real time? But yeah, interesting. Just trying to do everything they can to get the regime to collapse, isn't it? But interesting nonetheless. It was a very interesting thing to say. Adrian Lekee didn't say anything, but just gives us a bit of money. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, sir. Luke Stewart again says, I heard an interesting take that the US is waiting for the Israeli people to pick someone so it doesn't look like they pick it for them. Interesting, if true. I think the people of Persia are less likely to accept an Israeli pick in and of itself, but interesting if that's true. Oh god, someone's got a very, very long name here. Katerin Yamiyar Yaz Andragaff says, spontaneous, like a quote, spontaneous demonstrations taking place in New York and Tehran, quote, says George Orwell. Yeah. Good point. Some might say that's cynical. I wouldn't. Yeah. Yeah. We're suddenly at war with Eurasia and always have been. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Good point. Interesting. Funny. Not funny. Scary. Okay. Link Stewart again says, oh, no oil is going to go up. Good thing we've got Venezuela supposedly going to cash to crash the oil price. Yeah, I talked earlier on, didn't I, all about oil prices and the various fallout. We'll see what happens today when the markets open, commodities markets. Well, they'll be open now, won't they? In Europe, anyway, not the US yet. We'll see how trading goes in terms of crude today. Whether I'll, on the Bow Show tomorrow morning, saying, oh, the price of crude is like $150 a barrel. It's like the all-time high. Or whatever. We'll see. We'll see. Again, I looked at the price this morning. I think it was like $78 a barrel. $80-odd dollars a barrel. So it hasn't spiked insanely. Yet. We'll see what happens today. See what happens today. Okay. Bo, you are a handsome man. Very dashing. Harry. No, thanks for saying that. Midas Touch 2022. Cheers. Appreciate that. Richard Inman said I look like a rat. Well, no, that's very kind of you to say. Paid $2 to say that. Okay. The Educated Yobo says, seeing Habib and Farage gagging to be a gimp for the US tells you about their focus. They are never going to pick up a rifle, nor will their kids, but for thinking about consequences, they're the traitors. I mean, reform, Tyson Farage came out very quickly, just full bore 100% support for Israel and the US. I mean, yeah, there you go. Yeah, them or their kids will never have to fight, but so it's easy, isn't it, to be a coach from the sidelines. Yeah. Did you say Habib as well? Okay, I didn't know that. I'm not really paying attention to Ben Habib anymore. Well, he's worth 150 votes at an election. Yeah. Not actually of no real consequence, isn't he? Now? He's been weighed and measured and been found wanting. Okay, Principal Dunsertie says, neither America or its master can put boots on the ground. They will simply ride it out. What, the Iranian regime will simply ride it out. Best outcome is that they get rainbow feminism, yay. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I mean, that may well be completely accurate, what you've said there. Okay. There's still quite a few to go through. So LJNV says, Bo, why is Tommy Robinson trying to derail Restore with his comment on Lowe's X post by saying that there is no such thing as an Englishman? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Well, Tommy Robinson is a Sivnet, isn't he? So, he's been on record a number of times saying anyone can come and be English if you've got the right bit of paper. Like a Sikh person can come from India and just be English now. So, you ask me, why is Tommy doing that? Well, because that's his worldview. That's his worldview. So, of course, so he's going to try and muddy the waters of any sort of English people wanting their country back. Insisting that there is an ethnic element to being English. There just is. Call that what you want. Right? Nana Acuna is not English. She can have a bit of paper saying she's British. She can live here. But she's not ethnically English. There is an ethnic... This is at the heart of it all, isn't it? That even Ben Habib or Tommy Robinson can't accept, refuse to accept. You don't see them often making the argument the other way around. Like, I can go to Japan and be Japanese. I'm a Japanese person now. I can go to Eritrea or Nigeria. And I'm a Nigerian now. I'm Nigerian. No. There is an ethnic element to being Nigerian or being Japanese or being English. Sorry, there just is. That's reality. All right. Same person, LJNV, says, I think it's strange that Rupert doesn't back Israel and all of a sudden he's trying to dictate terms on policy. He's becoming a thorn in the side. In the side of who? I don't know. I haven't even really been looking at what Rupert has been saying about all of this. So I really haven't, actually. I don't even know what his position is exactly on it. I've just been watching all that's been going down in the Gulf region. So I guess I'll have to get back. I'll almost certainly speak about it in coming days. Okay, the same person with the very, very long name, Katering Yamiyar Yaz Endgraf, says, can we just be real that this is Israel's revenge on Persia, like Iraq was their revenge on Babylonian? Rome, Europe is next. Okay, I don't get everything you're saying there, but the general point you've said, yeah, I agree with. It's Israel's revenge on Persia. Yeah, I mean, Bibi Netti has been quite open about it over the years. It's like, if they want to destroy us, we'll destroy you, sort of thing. Yeah. Oh, maybe you're making a point about ancient times, like the Babylonians. Because modern day Iraq, like the Babylonian Empire existed in what is the modern city, the modern country of Iraq. The Babylonians took over the city of the kingdoms of Israel and Judea, didn't they? And put all the Jews into slavery. No, that was the Assyrian kings. Anyway, it's complicated, isn't it? Got long-form content all about the Babylonian and Assyrian empires on Epochs. It's complicated, isn't it? Is it revenge for that? Revenge for things that happened like 1000 BC or whatever? Okay. What else have we got here? Last two. Someone else with a really long name. Hi-ho Sheffield Wednesday. Okay, sorry. It's easier than I thought. Hi-ho Sheffield Wednesday says, which monarch in English history do you think is the most interesting to read about? Oh, God, that's a good question. Most interesting. Well, personally, I'm a fan of Henry V. His campaigns of 1415 and 1417. I can't stop reading about them. But there's loads of interesting... The campaigns of Edward III and the Black Prince, Cressy and Tours, and that's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. The life of the conqueror himself, William the Bastard, William the First. It's fascinating. There's loads. The life of Henry VIII is fascinating. There's loads. It just depends what you're into. My first pick is always Henry V, though. What, I haven't got a 12, 13-part series on the Epochs all about that? Hours and hours of me talking about it in silly detail. Check it out behind the paywall, £5 a month, bronze tier membership, lotusseaters.com. All right, and the last one. Thundercalk 2028 says, Assad, Maduro, Ayatollah out, and Putin is next. I wonder. Interesting, funny comment. I doubt it, mainly because of the Russian Air Force and a nuclear capability. But maybe, who knows? Okay, that's the show. It's now ticked 18 minutes past 9 in the AM, Greenwich Mean Time. It is Monday the 2nd of March in the year of our Lord 2026. You have been the glorious band, the chosen few. My band of brothers and sisters. Thank you for watching. Without you, it isn't a thing. Try and make the best of the day ahead if you can. I know it's not always easy, right? When you've got a normal adult life filled with boring stuff that you have to do, it's not always easy to seize the day, carpe diem. But if you can, try and make it count. You've only got a finite number of days on this earth. Try and make it count. I hope you do. Until tomorrow morning then, take care.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.